Last week, after years of denial by the National Football League, a top-level official conceded that what happens to the players on the field with their brains getting knocked into each other and into the ground does have a connection with CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, a disease you may have first heard of if you saw Will Smith in the movie Concussion playing Dr. Bennett Omalu last fall. It was Jeff Miller, the league's senior VP for health and safety policy, who spoke in a small roundtable discussion at a congressional hearing last week, and when asked if there was a connection, he said, quote, "The answer to that is certainly yes." It's the first time an NFL official has said something like that. So I decided to call on Dr. Robert Cantu, who I spoke to years ago. He is one of our leading experts on athletic brain trauma, one of the leaders of Boston University's Center for the Study of CTE, and the author of a book called Concussions and Our Kids. And I've invited him here to talk a little bit about his reaction to Miller's comments last week. Dr. Cantu, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be aboard.
Are we doing any better about concussions now because of what the NFL said a week ago?
Well, I don't know that we're doing any better because of what the NFL said, but certainly I think overall we're recognizing them better. We're not missing as many, though we still are missing some. And I think it's great that the NFL has finally connected the dots between repetitive head trauma and later life chronic traumatic encephalopathy, something that most of the researchers in the field have done long ago.
This is something that you and Dr. Ann McKee, your colleague at BU, have been studying for years, right?
Yes. In fact, our experience in National Football League players who have died and their brains have been donated to the center is that 90 out of 94 have had chronic traumatic encephalopathy. That's not a representative slice, admittedly, because this is a group of people that were symptomatic when they died, and that's why their families sent their brains to be studied. But of the group we've studied, 90 out of 94 have had it. So obviously the prevalence of it is much higher than it is in the population at large.
Now, as you know, for a long time, the NFL denied that there was any connection, which is why I was so surprised by this concession by Jeff Miller last week. Are you surprised, since you actually have done some advising for the league?
No, I'm not totally surprised. For a number of years, the National Football League has heard me at their head, neck, and spine committees talking about CTE and talking about the connections. And out of our group at BU alone, there have been close to 40 publications between 2008 and 2015 on the subject of repetitive head trauma, CTE, concussion, and so on. So there is a gigantic volume of literature that's accumulating on it. And this past January, there was a consensus conference that concluded just that, repetitive head trauma causes CTE.
What does this mean for kids who are playing football? If the NFL acknowledges it at their level and hopefully is making more changes on the field that will make NFL players safer, it's impossible to make it completely safe, right?
Yes, and I think it's very important to understand that chronic traumatic encephalopathy, every case in the world's literature has had repetitive head trauma as the common denominator.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not all athletes. You don't have to get your trauma on an athletic field, and if you are getting it on an athletic field, you don't have to get it from football. Obviously, enough head trauma from ice hockey, from lacrosse, from soccer, you name it, you can wind up with CTE. So this just isn't a football problem.
No, but I want to know if you think that the NFL's decisions in this matter trickles down to kids when they're younger. Are college students going to be helped by this? High school students, peewee, Pop Warner kids? Will things change? Have things changed in the years since I last spoke to you?
Well, I think they have, because you're seeing some NFL players retire sooner. And the case of Borland, who just retired after 1 year in the NFL and gave up millions that he could have made because he didn't want to take any further risk to his brain. So I think you already are seeing individuals make decisions based on what their risks are and understanding what those risks are.
I think you also have a lot of parents making decisions about whether or not they're going to allow their kids to play football at all.
Well, I sure hope so, at least in terms of when they start playing football, because we know the CTE issue is something that is exposure. It's much like tobacco. Not everybody that smokes is going to get lung cancer, but to the extent it's a greater period of time and a greater volume of it, you have a greater risk. And that's exactly the way it is with CTE. Total brain trauma, subconcussive blows, violent shaking of the head, even without recognized concussions, are a risk factor. So shortening down the period of time they take their head trauma, and most importantly, don't take it at the most susceptible years, those early years.
Here in St. Louis, as with many other American metropolitan areas, soccer is very, very popular among kids. We've got soccer leagues, we've got touring soccer teams, we've got soccer fields in every single community. But there are still kids out there who are hitting the ball with their head. You know, that's part of the game.
Well, it's part of the game that's changing. As you know, in 2012, we called for no heading in soccer under the age of 14. Wait till you're in high school before you start heading the ball. Practice heading with beach balls and lighter balls, but don't actually head in a game or practice where heads collide and heads collide with other body parts as well.
And why is that? Is that because the brain isn't formed fully, or the muscles around the head aren't formed fully until high school?
Both. You're absolutely right in both cases. The brain's not fully myelinated, and the connections have not yet been made and pruned and fine-tuned the way they were genetically endowed, and the neck muscles are very weak. So a blow of much lesser force can now produce a bobblehead doll effect.
Mm.
And as you said, soccer, in 2014, they were heading the ball at 5 years of age. Just in the last year, USA Soccer has said no heading under the age of 10 and limited heading between the ages of 11 and 13. So they've gotten a start. They're not where we want to see them, but at least they're on the way.
Which is a bigger problem in soccer, kids heading a soccer ball or kids heading other kids' heads?
Well, it's in the act of heading the soccer ball that you collide heads, and that's the bigger risk. Also in that same act, you collide with other body parts like a fist, a shoulder, a forearm, accidentally. It's not intentional.
And all of those are concussive and can cause problems later in life?
Well, they're not all concussive, but most of them cause a pretty violent shaking of the head, and over years, thousands and tens of thousands of those subconcussive blows can lead to CTE even without a recognized concussion.
Okay, so as I mentioned, we have soccer fields all over this area and tens of thousands of kids playing the game, which means you've got tens of thousands of parents at the game and certainly at least one coach for every team. But you don't have medical professionals on site. So how can the adults who are there become more aware of looking for signs of kids who are on the field who may have either hit their head against another kid or gotten an elbow to the head or other problems that can cause head trauma?
Well, one thing they can do is read the book, Concussions in Our Kids, and learn what the concussion signs and symptoms are.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, there are also some common sense things. If you see somebody getting up very slowly, holding his head, wobbling about a bit, assume that person's had a head injury until somebody who's qualified has ruled it out.
Anything else?
Well, anybody who is having some trouble with memory, not remembering what they're supposed to be doing on the field, anybody who has balance or coordination issues, anybody who's complaining of a headache, these are some of the common symptoms that you have after a concussion. We're not really asking parents to diagnose a concussion, but if you think that your child has had head trauma and now they're showing some of these signs, it's best and safest to pull them out and have them be examined by somebody that does have concussion knowledge before you allow them to return.
You mentioned that we shouldn't allow kids playing soccer to head the ball until they're 14, but earlier you also mentioned things like full contact, ice hockey, etc. At what age do you think it's appropriate for them?
Well, It's a little repetitive and it's a little arbitrary. We use 14 again, and we're really doing it because at some point you're going to have to play it like you play it in college if you're going to get college scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking the high school age, really, and some kids at age 14 are pretty skeletally mature and ready to go and contact sports, and others aren't. And if you're not, it's best to wait. Ice hockey is the most advanced of all the sports. They've upped the level, or upped the age, I should say, for full contact to age 13. So they're essentially there.
I know that on the college level, when it comes to football, the Ivy League schools announced just a couple of weeks ago that they're not going to allow tackling at practices. That is probably to protect the players' bodies going forward, but that'll also help protect against head-to-head hits, won't it?
Well, it will, and it is actually because of the risk of concussions and subconcussive blows and how you can dramatically eliminate them if you just eliminate tackling in practice. So they're not going to have full contact practices with tackling. They're going to have speed practices where you're going to go through the drills, you're going to go through the plays, and you're going to wrap your arms around somebody, but you're going to let them loose. In other words, I got you. Kind of a touch thing.
Mm-hmm.
I could bring you to the ground, but I'm not, because mm-hmm. that's when we get hurt.
People don't even notice that because they always think it's got to be head-to-head or helmet-to-helmet that causes these concussion problems. But every time a player is tackled and his noggin bounces off the earth, that's not good, is it?
No, it's not, and you can have a number of concussions, and we do every year, that occur just from ground contact.
Are helmets better, and can they possibly ever be good enough to keep a head from getting that concussion?
Well, helmets are better. There's no question about that. They test better. But do they prevent all concussions? No is the answer, and they never probably will, because what's happening with football is that you're not having a focal linear blow like you do with a baseball hitting somebody's batting helmet. There you can get tremendous protection from the helmet. But when you're getting two people lined up, two heads colliding, with rigid necks and 200-pound bodies or more than that attached to them, the head's going to be violently moved in space, no matter what you're wearing, just because of the mass involved. And it's that violent shaking that sets up the concussive injury.
I'm curious about CTE, because you said you studied 94 former NFL players, 90 of them had CTE. Why is it that this disease can only be confirmed after death?
Well, the reason is because the criteria for it currently are neuropathological criteria of an abnormal protein tau located in very specific areas. At depths of sulci, the brain on the surface is like hills and valleys. The gyri and the sulci are the depth. The gyri or the mountaintop. The tau is at the bottom of those valleys in the depths of the sulci. It's in superficial layers of the cortex, and it's around blood vessels. And no other neurodegenerative disease has the tau deposited in exactly that location.
Mm.
So that's the criteria you have to have to diagnose CTE. We're awfully close in diagnosing it with a very high probability in living individuals, looking at biomarkers such as tau deposition in the brain. And we have PET markers, PET scan markers for that, that are beginning to be used in research. The resolution is not good enough right now to have a very high degree of sensitivity, but it'll improve rapidly, and I wouldn't be surprised in 2 or 3 or 4 years if we don't have biologic markers for CTE.
If you could identify it in a living, breathing human being, could you do anything about it?
Yeah, what you could do first is have them taking head trauma.
Well,
and maybe in some cases arrest the disease at an asymptomatic stage or minimally symptomatic stage, prevent it from progressing. And also, we could then start therapies if we had something to be able to look at to see whether something's getting worse, staying the same, or getting better.
But
so that is a huge next step that we've been for the last 3 or 4 years doing a lot of research with at BU and other places as well. And I think we're going to see exciting things in the very near future.
Most of this, however, comes up in retired players. So they've already stopped the concussive habit that they had before. And now the reason that I guess they would come to you and your colleagues at BU or elsewhere, where the experts are on this, the reason that they would go there in the first place is because they're starting to have some of those symptoms, the progressive dementia or the suicidal depression, right?
No, you're absolutely right. That's why they do come and see us. And we can help the quality of one's life, because if there are cognitive issues, there are things we can do for that in the way of therapies and medications. If they have impulse control issues, behavioral issues, there are things we can do there, again, with therapies and medicines. And the same is true with mood issues, with depression, anxiety, panic attacks. But right now, today, as we're talking, we do not have any therapy that actually arrests the underlying disease itself.
But it is important once they start seeing those symptoms, and perhaps this is one of the good things that may have come out of all the work that you and people like Dr. Bernard Omalu have done in identifying CTE in former NFL players, is now they at least know what to look for. And if they hear about a colleague who is this way, or if a wife or a family member sees their husband or daddy acting in a certain way, people are now much more aware of it, and maybe they can get that person to a doctor who can help them.
That's correct.
Speaking of Dr. Omalu, what did you think of the movie Concussion?
Well, I know Bennett from the early days, and I thought the movie was, for the most part, good, took some stretches, and I thought it was interesting. I did not know how Bennett met his wife, so I learned about that.
Mm-hmm. The science they get right?
For the most part. The discovery of CTE was not made by Bennett Omalu. It was made many years ago, over 80 years ago, and it's been described in the world's literature for quite a while, mostly in boxers. Yeah. But it is absolutely correct and absolutely true that Bernard Omalu should take all the credit for having thought that Mike Webster's brain might have CTE, and then subsequently the brains of Andre Waters and Justin Strelzik. So he's the one that thought in NFL football players, maybe they've got CTE, and by golly, they did.
And I think if it did anything, and the movie should have been more of a hit in my opinion, because it was a darn good movie, but also I would like more and more people to become aware of this, because I've been talking about this for years with people like you. And that's why I was so happy last week to hear Jeff Miller, the Senior Vice President for Health and Safety at the NFL, saying certainly there's a connection between what happens to our boys on the field and what happens to their brains later in life.
Yeah, I think it's a huge step forward, and to me, as much as the NFL has been maligned about this issue, I think they should get credit for being the first professional sporting body to step forward and admit the connection. And as far as I'm concerned, this is now a challenge to the National Hockey League, to FIFA, the soccer, International Soccer Organization, World Rugby, other sports to do the same.
Dr. Robert Cantu is one of the leaders of Boston University's Center for the Study of CTE, the author of a terrific book that, as he mentions, not just kids, but coaches and parents of soccer kids should read, as well as football kids and hockey kids. It's called Concussions and Our Kids. He is one of our country's leading experts on athletic brain trauma, and I'm so happy to have him back on the show today. Thank you so much, Dr. Cantu.
Thanks so much for having me. Our pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.